Oh, I don't think I've ever been called the beautiful Helen Lay. That's pretty good.
Well, I tell you what, if it's one person I admire in this country when it comes to our social sector, it has got to be you. I mean, the goals you fellas are kicking down there in the South Island, the research, the evidence, the response to Māori kaupapa issues, social service issues is incredible. I mean, so yeah, give yourself a tick. Hey, we're here to talk about the announcement this week that the government made in relation to the disabilities sector. A lot of people, a lot of whānau out there would argue that their voice has not been heard for many years, many generations, and this might be a step in the right direction. What's your take on this?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I was talking with Gary Williams, who was one of the Ngāti Porou men, one of the members of the working group for the Machinery of Government Disability System Transformation.
Mm.
And Gary was saying, look, he'd been involved in a project called Support for Independence for People with Disabilities back in 1992. And he said, if you looked at that report, which is 30 years ago, they were calling for an independent, separate ministry for people with disabilities. And so it's been a hell of a long time coming to get to this. And, you know, I think last Friday was very overwhelming because you saw some of these people, Ruth Jones, Gary Williams, Tristram Ingham, people who have been working in this sector, being disabled, disabled by the system, trying to get to essentially put a poe in the ground and say, nothing about us without us. We want to have a ministry, which is our voice. We want to drive it. And, you know, you think it's about time. So
yeah,
it is exciting.
It is exciting. I mean, it's one of the first, I guess, Western-based democracies around the world where this sort of model is going to be put in place. But the governing of it is really interesting. I mean, a governance board led by disabled people and whānau, I mean, you know, making sure, though, that it's obviously got the budget to back up the work program that it's going to have. Mm. But one of the comments I read was the disabled community's voices will be embedded at all levels of decision-making, from the formation and running of the ministry to the development of accessibility legislation. But I guess it's got to be more than that too, doesn't it? It's got to be about the services that other government agencies, mainstream agencies, provide to our disabled whānau who are still missing the mark. We've got to see some consolidation of that voice, don't we?
Yeah, and you know exactly what disabled people have been saying is stop relegating us to just being a health issue or maybe being a welfare issue. What Enabling Good Lives is about is saying, let's put our good life as the focus rather than what department, what funding, what system.
Mm.
Let us as disabled people decide what it is that we want to create the best life that we can. Let's get the supports in place. Let's have ordinary life outcomes as being normalised, that's a goal that we can all achieve. And let's stop ableism stifling our way of thinking, that it's got to be creative, it's got to be innovative, and you know, absolutely right that all those government departments that have been sidelining disability issues have to take a really good look at what does accessibility mean. You know, how do you make your reporting accessible? How do you ensure that your expectations are not just about adding the voice of disabled people after you've created the policy, but actually asking them at the start of the policy, before the policy is written.
Yeah, I mean, and this comes down to, in fact, I think this was probably a good example of moving from co-design to led design. We often talk about, oh, you know, let's come and co-design this with us. Well, actually, no, we'll lead the design, thank you very much, because we know what we want. And this has got to be the acceptance of devolving decision-making, but also the planning and the implementation phase to our whānau.
Yeah. You know, and I remember when Whaia Tariana first introduced Enabling Good Lives, which is a good 10 years ago, 2011, there was one man who said to her, look, at the moment the system says I have to have 24-hour support, and I have to have somebody that stays in my house overnight, but they won't allow me to get what I really want, which is to be able to have a paddle boat and be able to just go out and be on the sea. And so he said, you know, wouldn't it be great if instead of having this 24-hour care, I could go to bed at 7 o'clock at night, they could come to me the next morning, but then I could have my dream. The funding that would have taken for somebody to be there at night could actually be used instead to buy a boat or to give me that time doing what I want in my life. And, you know, it was a really simple example that, you know, they weren't, he wasn't saying we want to, you know, rip off a system. This was about make that system work the way we want it to be, rather than just simply the system deciding buy for about two disabled people without any involvement of the disabled people in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely. And this also comes to some other big agencies that are out there that do impact the lives of our whānau living with a disability as well. I mean, we've seen in the last week or so reports around ACC and the way people who have been injured are being treated. I mean, that's just a disgrace. And then we've got the burgeoning potential and possibility that's going to be afforded in terms of the Māori Health Authority. We've got all of these different reforms that are going on around the place. I wonder whether or not this is that moment, and I might be a little bit over-enthusiastic, I should know better, but if this is not that moment for these voices who are otherwise being muted for so long to rise up and really shine.
Oh, I think so. And I think, you know, I had a really good conversation with Gary Williams about whether it should be disabled people or Ministry of People with Disabilities. And his view was very clear. He said, we are disabled because we are disabled by a system that marginalises and excludes us. So if you say disabled people, you are forever thinking about the system that relegates you to the side. Instead of, he said, the term people with disabilities makes it seem as if we can take disabilities on or off, but actually I will always have a disability, but the most damning disability is the fact that the system doesn't allow me to have a voice. And that's what's been so exciting about the changes to the system, because it is really transformative to say everybody in New Zealand should be thinking, you know, when we are looking at the design for marae, what's happening with the footpath so that there's no unexpected lips, or have you got good lighting? Have you got sound that is able to be heard, you know, without inaudibility being an issue? Are you ensuring that there's no sharp corners or dark spaces? And, you know, we can be doing that sort of accessibility audit in all of our houses and in all of our places, that we're not putting gravel down the driveway thinking, actually, without thinking, how's the wheelchair going to navigate this? And so I think the fact that there is this independent ministry and at the same time there is this Accessibility for New Zealanders Bill is really exciting, because it's saying the voice of disabled people will run the new ministry. But actually, every New Zealander has to ensure that they understand what barriers are and how to remove those barriers and create better access.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, you know, I think a survey recently found that about one in four New Zealanders had a disability of one form or another. But, you know, one of the ultimate goals, and maybe I'm just a fierce advocate because we have whānau with a disability in our family, it would be great to see more whānau with a disability in that big house down in Wellington, actually elected representatives. Yeah. I would love for our political parties to stop horsing about and actually actively recruit and promote whānau with a disability into the parties, even on the list. I mean, there's a great senator from Australia. He's a Green senator over there, and he's in a wheelchair. Jordan's his name, fantastic bloke. I've had the fortune of working with him. You know, it forced the Parliament of Australia, the federal parliament, to reorganise itself. But you know what?
Yeah.
It shouldn't have been forced. They should have just done it as a matter of daily business, right?
Yeah. You know, and I guess that's one one good outcome that's come of the crisis that we've been through over the last 10 years with the earthquakes, with COVID, is the normalisation of sign language so that at a time of crisis, the government has made it clear that everyone should be getting the messages. And what I like about that is that when we're not in crisis, we're still seeing signers being a key part of how government delivers its messages and more at local level as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, now, I can't let you go without talking about COVID, even though I'm all COVID-19'd out, to be frank.
Yeah.
We're in the final push, so to speak. Well, that's what some people are telling us when it comes to the vaccination targets. But the other reality that we're dealing with is that because of the underinvestment into Māori organisations, and this has been going on for some time, that we started late off the mark. And in fact, it's those Māori organisations that are attempting to not only pick up the pace, but they've always been out there doing the mahi, but the investment, to be frank, has just been crap and light on. I mean, from your perspective as the leader of, I would argue, a very fantastic organisation. Of course, I'm talking about the Whānau Water Commissioning Agency down there in the South Island. But from your perspective, how much further do you think we've got to go before we see, the country coming to at some point navigating its way through the end of this pandemic?
Well, I think of the Māori world, that's where the Whānau Water world is, we're still some way to go. And you're absolutely right that the staggering of the vaccine amongst age groups disproportionately disadvantaged Māori because Māori is a younger population. Mm. And so the whole staggering approach of Book Me vaccine was a real barrier to younger Māori being able to get the vaccine. And I think the other issue has been what we know from Whānau Ora is that one size fits one, and that you need to have 1,000 flowers blooming if you want to see the multiplicity of all of our peoples being able to be supported. It won't just work with one standard approach. Mm-hmm. And so we're now seeing that, with that we're seeing a bit more funding has been released to enable Whānau Ora navigators, for instance. They might not be doing the vaccinations, but they're able to transport people. They're able to have conversations with Whānau about what are the decisions they're making. They're being able to take some of that fear and take some of that that concern around what the vaccine does and be able to give the time that's needed in order for Whānau to make informed decisions. And so that, I think, was really understated at the beginning of the campaign, was that I don't think the designers of the campaign rollout realised that Māori want to make informed decisions. Yeah. That, gone are the days when you jump as high as somebody tells you to jump. And so to be able to have informed decisions, you need to have people that you respect, and they need to be the diverse ranges of people that have the credibility. Mm. I think it's moving.
Yeah.
I think what's happened in Christchurch, for instance, the alert that has come upon us in the last week has really pushed things along because people are seeing it's right here in my face. And once it's in the Māori community and it's a very close-knit community, then, you're one step away from COVID. And so, our sympathies and our aroha have been with everybody in Tāmaki Makaurau who's been really taking this for the team of 5 million. They've been doing such heroic work, health professionals, whole water providers, but also Whānau members who are just keeping on, staying the course. We're not at the finish line yet, you can't help but be incredibly impressed by the ways in which Whānau Ora, whole water providers, iwi leaders, you know, the people who are out, the musicians, the entertainers, the people who are really trying to ensure that all sectors of our community, that, and particularly a rangatahi focus, are getting a chance to have the conversation in order to be able to make their decisions.
Well, of course, that's the next level now for our rangatahi to pick it up and lead with it. And for us, particularly in decision-making roles, to allow that to happen, just to get out the way. Let our young people take charge of the comms, take charge of the kaupapa, and drive us across the line. Hey, you know, and I'm obviously here in Tamaki as well, and if it's any consolation to our listeners, yes, it is true. I did go and buy a $20 Clippers from the supermarket. I'd say it was made in New Zealand. Helen, the back of my head looks paru as. It looks terrible.
Well, who's looking at the back of your head anyway?
No, well, that's right. That's right. Hey, at least I've got still remnants of the hair at the back of my head, unlike my Uncle Dave, who's gone. It's all gone. Hey, look, Helen, I want to meet to you and our whānau down there south. Thank you for your support. But more importantly, thank you to all the amazing work that the Whānau Water Commissioning Agency does. You know, I get to see it. It's a privilege to see it and witness it every single day. And to be frank, without pocket rockets like you, Helen Leahy, we'd be a long way still back in a Melbourne Cup race that's already bolted out the gate. Hey, kia ora, thank you so much for joining us this evening. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Not a problem.
Ka kite.